Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. Books.
Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and today my guest, it's the first time I'm speaking to him, is Andre Aciman. He's written 4 novels, a memoir, several books of essays and nonfiction, a beautiful collection in which he asks around 25, 30 writers to name their favorite paragraph in Proust. It's called The Proust Project. And, well, I've just read his work for the first time. And I'm happy to say that his most recent novel, which just came out in paperback, Enigma Variations, I think is one of the great novels of this century so far. It's an enormous surprise. His novel, Call Me By Your Name, is up for several Academy Awards. He didn't do the adaptation. James Ivory did, but the best actor and the best film. I think, one by one, as he's written 4 novels, these novels get better and better because they both stay the same and grow more complicated. And Enigma Variations is, in a sense, a variation on Call Me By Your Name, but at a greater level of intensity, complexity, emotional variety. And it used to be, for a few years there, people were writing that writers in America didn't know how to write about sex. Well, Andre Aciman does know how to write about sex and emotion, and the surprise of discovering who you are, that at a certain point in one's life, sex is identity. And when you discover your sex, you discover who you are, and then you discover that you can discover again and again and again. We're going to be treated to revelation after revelation. And the book is made that way, as a set of variations, musical variations, on a lost theme. It's certainly not the Elgar Enigma Variations, or is it?
No, it's not. It's not. I just love the title.
Me too.
The book is, if I had to summarize it, it's about essentially assuming one thing about yourself and finding that you're not that self, you're someone else. And then just when you're ready to accept that, you find that, God, there's a third one and a fourth and a fifth. And I like the idea that there are about 9 of us because you have 9 Skittles. And we are like Skittles. Every identity is always being shoved aside for the new one or returned to the older one. But bottom line, I think it's all about the agony of desire, which is a good thing. Desire is always a good thing. But the agony that goes with it, the shame, the fear, the indecision, the ambivalence, all those other emotions that are attendant on it are unpleasant. And some people, and in most cases most people, don't know how to overcome that. We just live with this incubated thing in our head that seldom gets spoken.
Now, in your first novel, Call Me By Your Name, and in the long chapter that begins the Enigma Variations, the character is afraid to say who he is and what he wants. And his fear in both books dissipates. And I think that the reason why people want to ask Andre Aciman, are these works autobiographical, are you gay, are you bisexual, is because the enormous satisfaction of being with these characters who are brave enough to find out who they are. is so satisfying for a reader that you want these books to be, pardon the expression, true or real. Nabokov used to insist that Marcel Proust was writing about the boy he loved, not a girl.
Oh, what did Nabokov know?
Nabokov knew more than most of us, though, don't you think?
No, I don't
no.
think so.
Okay, tell me.
No, I don't want to sort of attack Nabokov now. He gets on my nerves. I never liked him. But I think that, yes, there was a boy that Marcel must have been very enamored of or obsessed about, which are not the same thing. But we know so little about Marcel Proust. We know that he tried to go to prostitutes or did go to prostitutes, women prostitutes, and that he ended his life going to a male brothel. But from the description of what went on in the male brothel, you would laugh. It was almost all voyeuristic and exhibitionistic. So there was really no making love. And I think that Marcel Proust probably never made love in his life. He had sex, he had the sort of passing, sort of episodic things happen, but I don't think he had actually the real thing. Or if he had it, not for long. Something always stood in the way of his opening up or allowing somebody into his life.
As opposed to Ilya and Paul, what do they have?
Well, they're very different. Paul, at the very beginning of his story, is 12 years old. And at 12 years old, he knows absolutely nothing about sex. And I wanted it to be this way because if he knew something about sex, he would be honest enough to say, I want to touch this person. I want this person to touch me. I want us to eventually have sex, which is what Elio does. Elio is very honest about himself. He knows what he wants. He knows it not even on the first page. He knows it before the story starts because he's seen a picture of Oliver and he's already attracted.
He knows, but he keeps it a secret.
Right. He never discussed it because who was he going to discuss it with? But he's, I think, very candid to himself about what he longs for from Oliver. He may never get a chance to say anything to Oliver. And I think, in fact, when he does say something, it is blurted out totally, almost inadvertently. So that there is no plan to say anything. It just comes out. And the reason why it gets spoken is because the other person is basically quizzing him and saying, are you saying what I think you're saying? Because he's not sure he understood. And of course, if he's asking the question, he has understood. But to go back to the character of Paul, who's 12 years old, he knows nothing. And I wanted it this way because I wanted him to go through the whole agony of desire and not know what he really wants. Except, and I because I have another theory, which has to do with, I think, desire, is that if we were all asked, have never taken a course, or were never told about sex, and the birds and the bees and all that stuff, if we had never known anything and were to discover sex through our own impulses, we would have discovered something that's totally, totally weird. And you might say twisted, because sex by its nature, unless it's directed somehow, can be very, very strange. And I think that what this 12-year-old boy discovers is that he has these longings. He wants to get undressed with him, but he doesn't know exactly why. And I was pushing it without him. And he doesn't even know how to masturbate. So that is out of the picture as well.
It's an astounding first chapter because he doesn't even know whether perhaps the older man that he loves might in fact be loved by his Paul's own father. He doesn't know. It's not exactly answered for us. And although he goes back to the place in the first chapter where he first met Nani, he's not expecting an answer. He has lived a life in which he's gone from dinner party to dinner party, mm-hmm. feeling elbows, knees, possibilities, but constant uncertainties. And what this book does is to say that some of us lead lives not of quiet desperation, but of constant uncertainty, mm-hmm. and of lives requiring constant acts of bravery. And when we are brave, eventually everyone else around us is brave too. No one says, "Darken my doorstep no more, Paul." They more or less say, "Oh, thank you for telling me."
I've been hoping you would say something like this all along, which is very, very strange. But that is the story of my life. I mean, if I have to go into my biographical self, there were people I was attracted to, and I never would have said anything to them. Except that eventually you say something and something comes back. You say, "Oh my God, the door is open. It's wide open. It's been open all this time. And why didn't I know?"
Paul is the character in the Enigma variations. Am I wrong to insist that he's a distant relative of sorts of Elio in Call Me By Your Name?
He could be. He could be. I think the first chapter of Enigma is very, very close to Call Me By Your Name. In fact, you might almost say it's a repeat performance, with the addition that the father's speech in Call Me By Your Name is taken to a step further, where the father basically turns out to have had that relationship. And it came out of my head, but I had the model right in front of me all along, because it's that novella by Turgenev called First Love, where the boy is in love with a girl, and he finds out later in the story that the girl is his father's mistress.
Now, in the new world of gender identification, I'm told that there are people who consider themselves to be agendered, not male or female, not necessarily sexual, rather defined by the discomfort and the fear that you're talking about in the first chapter of both of these books. And I wondered what you think of that, because I thought in your novels, this state is a hypothetical state to be broken down, to be destroyed. The walls of Jericho have to tremble.
And the trumpets are there. I'm not a trumpet. But I think that the question of sexual identity is, I hate to use the word because it involves sort of automatic response. It's a label. And one of the things that I try to fight against, I've always fought against it, was the inability to subject myself to a label or to even like labels. I don't need labels. And I think most people are very uncomfortable with labels. Now, the irony is that being plurisexual has become a label as well. So you can't seem to avoid those things. And yet, when I look at my whole life as a writer particularly, I'm Jewish, but I don't like being Jewish. I was never bar mitzvahed. I'm not Christian. My father converted, but that's a different... I mean, I'm multinational because I don't know where I belong. And I don't like patriotism. I don't like religious adherence. I don't like anything like that. And I certainly don't like taboos. That's one of the things I hate the most. But on the other hand, I'm surrounded by people who read me and who love my stuff and at the same time want a label. They need a label from me about myself or about the characters in the books. And I don't want to do that.
Because, Andre, they want your permission. They want to be told that what you've written about has happened, because if it has happened, it can happen again. And they want it to happen again to them.
Oh, I see. I never thought of that. They want it to happen to them.
These books are, what can we say, erotic utopias. They're
nicely said.
Extraordinarily gifted books at a time when most writers, particularly most male American writers, have been exposed as being uncomfortable with anything but the most accidental forms, brushing of arms, that kind of thing. You are writing about the texture of the soles of feet, the space between the toes, the plangency of the lips. I mean, and that's just the beginning.
Yes.
That's the doorway.
Thank God, yes.
Yeah. And, you know, I wondered, what do you think may have given you permission in a time that's so puritanical and so repressed in this regard?
What I am particularly, I find very oppressive, is that the people who are liberals and allegedly open-minded are themselves extremely prudish about sexuality. So that once again, you find, which is very strange, I go to a gym, the old people, the people in their 60s, 70s, and 80s walk around naked. The younger people in their 20s, 30s, 40s are always covered up. It's as if they're too, they even dress, put on their undies in a way that suggests that they're very uncomfortable to show you their private parts. And yet these are people who probably do hookups and whatever it is that they have to do all the time. So I don't understand this. There's a kind of prudishness even among the liberals, whereas I, not that I'm any different significantly, but I like to go to those zones that have made me uncomfortable in life and that I know for a fact are uncomfortable for everyone else. I'm Jesus saying, if you are any better than I am, go ahead, cast the first stone. But nobody does, because when I write, especially the way I write, it's in a way it invokes your response to say, I am that way. So that here is the funny thing. I get emails from people, lots of emails, you can imagine. People in the 60s, 70s, 80s, write to me saying, I wish my father had been X, Y, and Z and had given me that speech as opposed to the fact that he had reprimanded me and beaten me. That happens. That's another one. But the mail that I get that really sort of, so I find sort of very uncomfortable and complimentary at the same time is mail from girls who are 13, 14, 15, 16 and who basically are telling me that I have opened up their whatever it is, changed them, given them hope, whatever it is. So it is a utopia, if you want it. Why are girls this young, who probably are innocent, who basically already devour the book many, many times and find that it gives them solace, hope, or at least a direction? Who am I to give people that? I'm telling people that they are foul-minded.
No, you're not. You see, I'm a kind of shy guy myself.
Yes.
And
so am I, by the way. I blush in a second.
I think Enigma Variations is a magnificent book and a breakthrough in the art of writing novels because Call Me By Your Name tells us about things we already sort of know.
Yeah.
Whereas the Enigma Variations goes further and further and further into the realm of the unknown. And I just found myself admiring your ability, because these are not, in any sense of the word, pornographic works, nor are they, as Susan Sontag once used the word, pornosophical works. It's not the story of the eye. It's not Bataille. It's the realism of gratified desire, what Blake called gratified desire, and that gratified desire comes with a cost, a price, a punishment, and yet there's nothing so beautiful as gratified desire, in prose or in life.
I'm in prose or in life.
I'm talking with Andre Aciman. His newest book is called Enigma Variations. It's just been published in paperback by Picador. I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. Among his books is a first novel called Call Me By Your Name, and it just got made into a film, and we'll be hearing in the next week what kinds of multiple awards it's likely to win in its realm, which is film, in the Oscars. We'll continue after this short break.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FD Weekend wherever you listen.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, this is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Andre Osserman about his latest book, Enigma Variations, and his first novel, Call Me By Your Name, novels that cover first love, how it lingers through adolescence and later life, and how it returns again and again. All of the things, the old-fashioned games of disapproval, and you mustn't be this and you can't be that, these are no longer true in our lives, and it's time for them to stop being true in our novels. But as far as I know, including writers who do identify themselves, as you do not, as gay, writers like Edmund White, writers like Colm Tóibín, they still don't have parents who say, go ahead, enjoy yourself, I envy you.
Because I think that the holding back is, structurally speaking, it is what keeps the story going. The danger of being caught, the danger with disease, the danger of being clobbered by bullies and so on. That is such an easy trope, but it holds certain stories together. It gives them the kind of pudding shape that they need. I didn't want any of that.
Absolutely right. I see it now. That fear generates most narratives, and instead, these are people who are in the process of removing their handcuffs, of removing their bounds, of reaching under the table and touching, of putting a heel in another's lap and grinding. It's known that the other person won't say, stop it. And what's amazing is that the game gets continued on the very final page of Enigma Variations. There's another revelation where I found myself having to gasp, they're still together? So that what makes a plot in an Andre Osserman novel is error instead of fear.
Thank you. You've hit the nail, because I teach that. Because I think the greatest novels written in France are about misled individuals who happen to be very intelligent and very observant, but who are constantly, basically in error, because they've misjudged the others time and time again, and they've misjudged themselves.
I wonder if this has something to do with the fact that I had the pleasure, honor, and thrill of being taught by René Girard, author of Deceit, Desire, and the novel.
Great book.
Great work. Yes. And he could diagram with his hand in the air as he raised his eyebrows at the plot of a very complicated French novel leading up to, and what do? They kick him out. exile is a huge part of how a love plot proceeds according to René Girard's vision of the French novel. Now, but I think you have your own vision of the novel and how it works and why it works. Can you give me a few hints?
I think they're about characters who are caught unprepared for being attracted to someone. Most people are intelligent enough to realize as soon as it happens that they're attracted. And these characters know this right away. The only issue is that they were not prepared for it. It came suddenly because they met the person suddenly. And so suddenly they're attracted and they want to deny it. It could be a woman, it could be a man, it doesn't matter. The first impulse is to find something wrong with them, to dislike them so they can be rid of them, from not desire them. And in fact, what happens is that there's a counter instinct within them that says, no, keep at this, don't let it go. And they go, all my stories are the same.
Your stories may be the same, but they contain in them, what shall I say, recommendations, advice. I went out to eat while reading Enigma Variations, and a waiter said to me, I like your glasses. And instead of burying my head in the book, I lifted my head up and I said, but they're the same as your glasses. Give me your glasses. And before long, we were changing glasses, and whatever could happen following that was happening because I wasn't being shy, timid, regretful, resourceful. And the books teach resourcefulness.
Oh, they encourage it? Yes, they sanction it totally. They like resourcefulness. Boldness is certainly a plus because I don't have much myself. I have never been bold when it comes to other people. I mean, I have been, of course.
But, of course you have.
But I don't, those are not the episodes I remember. The ones I remember are the ones where I totally sort of got flummoxed and failed. You only remember what you wanted to do, not what you did.
There are four novels by Andre Osserman and at least four or five books of essays. There are books that he's edited. I intend to read all of them. They're very, very entertaining, engaging. They're not at all unintelligent. They're smart. They're tickling. They are provocative. And they are adult, even though they take place among young people. Young people learning how to be adult.
Yes.
It's very exciting.
It is. I think it is. It's hard to do, but it's exciting.
Are you at work on another one? Because I want to be sure there's another one.
I would like to think there is another one. Yes.
And I want you to promise, this is the first time that I know of that you've been in Los Angeles. I want to talk to you every time you're here now.
Okay, fine.
You promise?
Okay, fine. Thank you for having me.
It's been a real pleasure. I really want to recommend the work of Andre Osserman. In paperback, it's from Picador. In hardcover, it's from Ferris Strauss and Giroux. The books we've been talking about are the newest Enigma Variations and the first Call Me By Your Name. You can comment on today's show or read an excerpt from Enigma Variations at kcrw.com/bookworm. Download the podcast from kcrw.com or from iTunes. You can also listen on demand with KCRW smartphone apps. Special thanks to my co-producer, Michelle Escobar. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. Special thanks to my assistant, Sean Sullivan. And I want to thank the woman who at Picador was so helpful to me, Brianna Schockenberg. She was great. Every time I had a problem, she solved it. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcast the most recent ones at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me next time on Bookworm when Dave Eggers and Mokhtar Akhanchali are my guests.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Reptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.